Hey there, beautiful people. It's Travell here, and I wanted to come to you before you get into this episode to acknowledge a mistake Jared and I made this week. We're already getting, emails and comments and tweets about it, but in talking about Sam Smith's vocal excellence, we misgendered them. I can talk about intentions and all of that other shit, but as a non-binary member of the trans community, I know deeply the importance of accurately referring to folks as they wish. And so does Jared and all of our guests. We're sorry. We thank you for holding us accountable now and into the future. We will do and be better.
Ladies, gentlemen, and gender expansive folks, welcome to Fanti. I am your host, politics and pop culture journalist. Travell was reading me about having gotten this ladies and gentlemen thing wrong, so that's why we're laughing. Welcome to Fanti. I'm politics and pop culture journalist Jared Hill.
I'm Travell Anderson. Coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about white people who sound black in their music or use black sounds in their music and what that even means. We're talking Blue-Eyed Soul with the one and only music journalist, cultural critic, author Garrett Kennedy is joining us. Hey there, Garrett.
Hello, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to spill a little tea with you guys today.
We are happy to have you, but before we get into the Fanti conversation, for those who don't know, Garrick is an R&B stan, and so we wanted his thoughts for our Pass the Popcorn segment this week, which is all about last night's versus between legends Brandy and Monica. Garrick, you've got to give me, what are your like top line immediate thoughts, the things that are sticking with you from the verses?
My top line, I mean, I'm still pretty much on cloud nine. I worship these two women. I love their entire bodies of work. There was moments that I definitely was hoping for. I was hoping for a couple more deep tracks from both of them. But I think what they shared with us was something that was so beautiful, so needed, so overdue, which was them loving up on each other, was them celebrating one another, but also more than anything else was them really putting to bed this idea of we dislike each other, we hate each other, we have this beef, we can't stand to be around each other. This thing that has happened for, and we're looking at 20-something years now of history between the two of them, and between these two fan bases that have also really kind of fueled a lot of this. And I thought that what they did last night was really, really, really beautiful. I was on cloud nine the entire time. I was truly, it was like it took me back to being six and like really loving the two of them. And I, every single moment, I was here for it.
It's so interesting because I feel like this past week we've heard about like two beefs that weren't real. Carrie Hilson was on Claudia Jordan's Fox Soul show talking about how her beef with Beyonce was this manufactured thing that the label wanted her to do. But she, listen, that's what she said. That's what she said. Garrick is giving me all kinds of faces.
But can we not? But I'm just. I appreciate Carrie saying that. However, does she think that we all forgot the lyric? Who else could she have possibly been talking about when she says, I need you to sit down and go have your babies?
If you saw the interview, she said that she didn't write the lyric. She didn't want to do it. It's a whole thing.
Oh, we're fully
anyway,
aware. Yeah.
Garrick.
Yeah. I just don't like when people do that position of like, well, I didn't write it. It's not on me. But it's like, does somebody have a gun to your head to record it or no?
Well,
is that what happened?
We will let Carrie speak for herself. We ain't talking about Carrie Hilson right now. But what I am saying is that like this Brandy and Monica thing, I remember coming away from it thinking like, I don't know that I think there's like any real beef between them, but they did come off as two people who are not necessarily close, that don't have a strong relationship with each other, but have known each other for a long time and have like had experiences together and know each other. That's how it came across to me, because there were definitely moments where I was like, the chemistry is not really there. Like, they're not homegirls, but I don't think they're like sworn, enemies of each other either. Travell, what did you think?
I mean, I feel like we picked up on a just like personality differences between them. I don't really know. I mean, I will say that, you know, I was in the group chat saying, oh, Monica wants to beat her ass right now. But yes, I think ultimately it was just like, I think it's just personality differences that we saw were clashing. And not like, you know, Monica actually wants to, you know, fight her. But I, you know, I tuned in. I just wanted to make sure Sideline Hole got played and Every Time the Beat Drop get played.
Okay, I thought about you so much because that's actually like one of my favorite Monica records. And I'm like, the only other person that I know who loves it as much as I do is Travell. And the way I was shaking that ass with Every Time the Beat Drop.
Listen.
What was crazy to me about it was Brandy was very conservative when Sideline Hole came on. And she was like, Soraya's here, and I was kind of taken aback by that.
Yeah,
that was surprising.
I mean, it's funny, you know. I had interviewed her for a project tied to the album that she just put out, which obviously I love. But I was actually very surprised to hear from Brandy how conservative she is now, and not that that was something that was not there. It definitely has always been, but I think this idea of like, you know, she doesn't really even like to curse. Like, she doesn't drink at all. That's why I thought it was so funny, even though, you know, Ciroc, you have to plug them. But it's like, she doesn't drink. She doesn't smoke. She doesn't do any of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it is still very funny to me when we were talking about her daughter who was about to go to college. And it's like hearing her say, close her ears on the thing last night. I'm like, this is the funniest, like, most auntie shit ever of like, close your ears.
We were all tripping like, isn't Sarai like pricing homeowners insurance and shit at this point? Like, what are you talking about? She can't hear the word help. It was a lot. It was a lot to me. But I really enjoyed it. I ended up like, because Apple Music, I watch it on Apple Music on my TV. And so they like will do a playlist right afterwards. So like after it was over, I had the playlist playing. Mind you, it was 3 hours long. Versus tends to be a lengthy show. But it's nice to like turn it on and like Char Jocel was here, who's been on the show a number of times. We like we're just kind of enjoying it. It was a fun time to have. And so I really, really enjoyed it. Travell, last thoughts?
Yeah, I just, you know, I think we've gotten out of the business of like actually trying to say who won the battle. I don't know if people are actually doing that. They were just like, we as fans.
Oh no, they were on the internet carrying last night. People were carrying to a point where I'm like, I actually want you all to go have a conversation with your therapist about what you're holding on to, because this is not even something that makes any sense to me. You actually really want two women who are 40 to like still be like 17 with some weird beef. Like, it was the weirdest thing to me.
I also do want to just acknowledge like the attire. Monica came in there and gave you a full snatch.
She gave Fendi, you snatch,
the whole time I was like, is her waist going to show up? Because I don't think it's here. And like people were coming for Brandy with this coat that she had on. And then like today on Twitter, they were like, you mean the $3,000 coat?
Get into
wore?
It. Oh, okay. Get into okay. it.
Yeah.
Earth Goddess teasing us. But I also think that that's also another perfect example of the two different personalities that I think so many people felt so challenged by. Like, Monica's always been that like cool girl, hood chick that like, it was so like just watching, sitting her like snatched up in this Fendi. And like, you know, Brandy has very much been like Earth Goddess for the last like 15 or so years. So like it just was such this perfect moment. And like, I don't know, another takeaway for me is, yes, I've been holding on to this tour that I want them to do for a long time. I don't want to age myself or how long I've been following these two women. But the other side is, I was like, even if we can't get that, I would just totally just watch out for like 2 hours every single week on my TV, because just the comedy between the two was really, really, really enjoyable. Like, the personalities I thought was so fantastic.
I felt like the energy at the end when they were like up out of their seats doing the Boy Is Mine, like that's really what I wanted for the whole 3 hours, and I got it for the last 5 minutes. So I was like, okay, if we could get something
like
that.
Can you blame anybody? I mean, for 3 hours, are you really trying to like sit there and like be dancing? I mean, I was in my living room, but I'm also not being watched by a million people.
Right.
I'm going to just sit. Let the music play. I made it already,
well,
y'all.
There is that.
You know. You know the words.
As long as there's a good cocktail. Shout out to the folks at Ciroc. All right, When we return, as many episodes are typically born, I sent Travell a text with four words because I was hooked on a song that had me feeling all types of ways. She reminds me of my mother. She wonders how my day went and don't care about my paychecks. Well, I don't want to keep my baby waiting. The song is Alan Stone's Brown Eyed Lover. The text read, Fanti. Blue-eyed soul, and that's nice.
Hey, Jay Keith.
Hey, Helen. Hey, you've got another true-false quiz for me?
Yep. Our trivia podcast, Go Fact Yourself, used to be in front of a live audience.
True. Turns out that's not so safe anymore.
Correct. Next. Unfortunately, this means we can no longer record the show.
False. The show still comes out every first and third Friday of the month.
Correct. Finally, we still have great celebrity guests answering trivia about things they love on every episode of Go Fact Yourself.
Definitely true.
And for bonus points, name some of them.
Recently, we've had Ophira Eisenberg, plus tons of surprise experts like Yardley Smith and Suzanne Summers.
Perfect score. Woo-hoo. You can hear Go Fact Yourself every first and third Friday of the month with all the great guests and trivia that we've always had. And if you don't listen, well, then you can go fact yourself.
That's the name of our podcast.
Correct. Woo!
Listen, I'm a hotshot Hollywood movie producer. You have until I finish my glass of kombucha to pitch me your idea. Go.
All right, it's called Who Shot Ya? A movie podcast that isn't just a bunch of straight white dudes. I'm Iffy Whiteyway, the new host of the show and a certified BBN.
BBN?
Buff black nerd.
I'm Alonzo Duraldi, an elderly gay and legit film critic who wrote a book on Christmas movies.
I'm Drea Clark, a loud white lady from Minnesota.
Each week, we talk about a new movie in theaters and all the important issues going on in the film industry.
It's like Guess Who's Coming to Dinner meets Cruising.
And if it helps seal the deal, I can flex my muscles while we record each episode.
I'm sorry, this is a podcast? I'm a movie producer. How did you get in here?
Iffy, quick, start flexing.
Bicep, lats, chest. Who Shot Ya? Dropping every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Fans High. This week we're talking about music, primarily because I've been hooked on this song that I know my neighbors are surely tired of hearing me play in the house. And it's by a white man, and you heard it as we went to break. His name's Alan Stone. And this will be sort of in the vein of one of my favorite episodes ever, the gospel music episode that we did called When Gospel Music Slaps and Leaves a Mark with Michael Chin. This week we're diving into part of music that's not actually a genre itself, and that's probably actually part of the issue. Blue-Eyed Soul is a section of music that you listen to and then you look up the artist and immediately say, bitch, I know you fucking lying, because that's exactly what happened to me. It's titled that's really been given to many white artists that sing music that is in one way, many or another, exceedingly black. Whether it's the way they sing, the sound of the music, or just the fully black support of the black background singers, band members, and other performers, there's this blackness that finds its way into many a white vocal cord. And Garrick is here to help us talk about this. Garrick, we've been like trying to figure out the perfect episode to have you join us for. And like, we were like, I don't know what the perfect episode it is, because you're like such a good guest for this. So we're really happy to have you here. When we get started, we all have picked three songs that are going to be a part of our conversation today. Garrick, we're going to start with your first song and really open up the conversation of what does it mean to sound black in music? And I would love for you to answer that question for us after we play your first song. Your first song is so good, like a classic at this point. It is John B's They Don't Know. And baby, if ever there was a white man that sounded like a black one, it is John B. Garrick, this song, like, as we were pulling all these clips, I was like, oh my God, I ain't heard this in a minute and like in here getting my life. Talk to me about this song, but what does it mean to sound black in music?
I picked John B, and I picked that record for a really particular reason. I was going to pick a different John B song. I love John B a lot, actually. But what I thought was so interesting is, you know, in terms of my understanding around any sort of controversy with this topic, since I've been a fan of this, I wanted to start with him because John B is so interesting because he's someone who, you know, we talk about giving a pass, quote unquote, right? You know, he's one of the ones. Mm-hmm. He had the Babyface cosign. You know, he was the one who was being produced by Babyface. And I think that allowed so many people to not think about it, but also the swag. You know, there's so many different things that I think black listeners look for when they're seeing someone who is not black doing traditionally black music, when I'm talking about gospel or R&B or hip hop, yes, but definitely with R&B, it's so rooted in our experience as black people, and also it's one thing that it's one of the genres that we still hold such ownership over. It's not the same as jazz that has gotten away from us. It's not the same as rock that's gotten away from us. And that also doesn't get the credit the same way for country. I think a lot of the genres that our ancestors, you know, helped build and are the architects of, I think so many of them have obviously gone away from being seen as wholly black, right? We see it with the way that Beyonce was treated when she did Daddy Lessons. And we've seen it the way that, you know, a lot of our girls who want to maneuver around different parts of pop is like, oh God, why? And so the reason that I picked John B, because he's one of the earliest, you know, white men who were doing R&B that I fell in love with. And, you know, what's so interesting about him is, you know, you think back to the album before this, you know, They Don't Know, that's sort of a breakout moment. And it's one that I think everybody, when you think of John B, you know that record. But going back before that, I think back to that first album where, you know, we're not really seeing him in the videos all like that. He's kind of shied away in the photos. There was definitely a really conscious effort on the part of the label to kind of slowly walk his identity into us.
They wanted to delay that bitch.
They wanted to delay the I know you're fucking lying moment. And right? It's not something that I agree with. I've never agreed with it. I've always thought it was strange. But I definitely, this idea of sounding black is not something that I personally subscribe to. Right? And I think because... Mm-hmm. It's hard because I think, you know, right now I'm writing a book on, you know, Whitney Houston, and one of her biggest criticisms was that she didn't sound black enough. And what exactly is that? It's sort of like we look for these identifiers, but almost like stereotypical identifiers when it comes to the music. We want praise and worship every time we're listening to somebody doing gospel or soul. We want to hear this, you know, big throated voice every time that we hear an R&B record. And that's not every singer. There are tons of black singers who don't perform that way, who don't sing that way. And there's tons of white singers who actually do. And so I think that idea of like sounding black is sort of connected, at least in my opinion, to the fact that so much of our genres have been lost. So we have this idea of what is black music? What does black music sound like?
I think that's a great place for us to kind of move in, because I want to talk a little bit later about those black artists who have tried to cross genre but have not been able to, and the ways that white artists are able to. But Travell, what's your first song?
Well, so I want to throw to... I think somebody who actually fits perfectly in that John B camp of like white people, or at least non-black people who we give a pass to. And so this is the iconic Tina Marie, Square Biz.
Absolutely.
Yes. 100%.
Let's play it. Okay, so Square Biz for me.
Travell, before you go though, I have to say, like, when we were pulling clips for this yesterday, for like all of these clips, Square Biz was the one that was the hardest to find, like, what 10, 15 seconds do you even pull?
Listen.
It's so good.
Okay, listen. Tita, and I, so I wanted, I did some research. You know, that's how the academics say research. They say research. Did some research on Tina Marie, whose government name is Mary Christine Brockert. Very white name. And she's actually, she's mixed heritage. Puerto Rican, Portuguese, Italian, Irish, and American Indian. And now, did you know that this woman, who apparently was once known as the Ivory Queen of Soul in the 70s, she was the highest-selling white artist in the history of Motown, apparently. And she sung all these songs. But did you know that after she had been out of music, out of the music spotlight for about 10 years, in 2004, when she reemerged, she was signed to Cash Money Records.
Yep. One of my favorite records that she did was on Cash Money.
And I had no idea about this.
I mean, but this proved, this is another example, I think, right, of that cosign that Tina Marie has from, like, black folks. And it's like, it's one of those situations where it's like, you don't even care what her background is. You just know she can sing down, very much like you were talking, Garrick, about, like, that flat-footed singing. Like, Tina Marie gives you the business, like, a lot of other people can't, you know, regardless of their color. And I was like, we can't have this conversation without injecting a little bit of Tina Marie into it.
So I want to jump into my first song, because this is the only artist that we're playing twice today. It's Justin Timberlake, and I have a Justin Timberlake song. Garrick, I know you have a Justin Timberlake song, because when I think about white folks that do like R&B music with like a huge band full of black folks and like a bunch of black background singers, like, and a bunch of black dancers, I always think about Justin Timberlake. But I've always been a Justin Timberlake fan. And now, before we start talking about Janet Jackson, I get it. I can't be more mad at him than Janet Jackson is. I'm just not gonna do it. So that's fine. But my first song is from the 2020 album, and it's called Not a Bad Thing. Take a listen. So I love this song. This was like the last track on the album, and it has like a bonus track attached to the end of it. But like, I love this song. It's like, it's a love song. It is very like R&B kind of vibe. The vocals are just beautiful. And like, I have always really, really loved this song. He has a Netflix special that I think is really, really dope as well. But like, I'm always thinking about, like, there are so many black people on the stage that, like, part of me feels like, oh, it's diverse and inclusive. And then there are parts of me that feel like, yeah, but I don't know. Like, I feel like ways about it when I'm watching Justin Timberlake or listening to him sing. Again, like, and part of that has to do with Janet Jackson, but like, it's a feel like. And I know, Garrick, you like Justin Timberlake. At least you have a song coming up from him a little bit later. Or that's your next song.
Yeah, get right into it.
Let's do Justin Timberlake's Cry Me a River here. So Garrick, what is it about this song for you?
So yeah, the reason I actually really wanted to hear those back to back like that is so you can see such the range in which he is performing within our genre of music. I mean, that's also the part of
it. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when I think about Justin, I think about the beginning of like you know, when I'm breaking out of NSYNC, which, you know, so that we can all be really clear here, like NSYNC was doing R&B the way Backstreet Boys is doing R&B, the way all boy bands essentially are doing R&B because they're all pulled from R&B bands. So I think that, you know, there was a clear choice that he could have made, which is to go extremely pop, and he didn't. It took him a while to do the extremely, extremely pop type music. At the very beginning, it was, I'm getting Timberland on these beats. You know, it's, I mean, Timberland doesn't, the vast majority of his work, which is why it sounds a particular way, the same way as when he works with Pharrell. But I do think that him starting out, with something like, you know, Cry Me a River, you know, on that album, which is like really just traditional, like when you think of what R&B was sounding like, you know, in the early 2000s, that hybrid R&B hip hop pop situation, it's like right in the square of that. And by the time we get, you know, to 2020, the 2020 experience, we're seeing him experiment with other forms of it. Yes, they're soul, but he's also kind of bringing in his bit of his roots. He's bringing in a little bit of country, which obviously is still related to the music that we have created, but he gave himself the space to do that. But it also took, you know, at that point, 2020 versus, you know, Justify, just how many years in between those two. So you think about how long he waited before he also started to try to go outside of this traditional music that he was doing. And that traditional music is essentially R&B. And it's essentially, you know, if it's not a derivative of R&B, it's a derivative of hip hop. Like, it's always, he's always been really clear on his influences. But the reason that I selected Justin is because he so often brought in this conversation about, you know, what is appreciation versus appropriation. And so when I think back to what Jared just said about watching him on this stage, watching him with all these Black performers and how that makes you feel, I understand that. But I also, you know, the other side of where my brain goes to it is, well, if I'm doing a bunch of R&B, who's going to be my backup singers? You know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be Black.
That part.
You know, 9 times out of 10, the band's going to be Black. 9 times, like, so much of it is going to end up being Black because of this is the music that I'm doing. And I think that that's the difference between what he's doing versus someone else. Lots of other people.
Well, and like when I was looking at Alan Stone, I hadn't really watched a bunch of Alan Stone videos until I was preparing for this episode. And watching his videos, it's like the 2-3 background singers in the video I was watching, Black women. The drummer was a Black man. The bassist was, I believe, a Black man. Like, it was just like Black on Black on Black on Black. And I was like, ugh, I just don't know how I feel. Like, I feel very mixed about it. So absolutely. Travell, what's your next song?
Well, before I do that, I have a quick question of Garrick. I feel like there is, for me personally, there's like a fine line, seemingly, sometimes, depending on the artist, between...
That was a very gray area that you just painted.
That's what it's complex and complicado, okay?
Okay, okay.
But it's about the line between, like, pop and R&B. I feel like with certain artists, they're, like, in that gray area, and, like, when it... And so my question for you is... Is there something that is like a telltale sign of like, oh, that's R&B or this is pop?
I mean, that's sort of the argument that we've been having for decades upon decades upon decades. you know, because of course there's a whole school of thought of, well, you know, pop music is just popular, right? Then there's a whole other school of thought as well, you know, pop music is operating in a particular type of structure, and it's very different from R&B, even though it isn't. I mean, it's the same structure. It's melody, it's lots of harmonies. I think those harmonies sound different because a lot of traditional pop music, so much of it is processed, you know, auto-tuned. And that's, again, it's fine. I don't have any criticism against that. But I do think that when you talk about this gray space, is you are seeing someone like, you know, I think of a moment like Frank Ocean, right? Frank Ocean, Channel Orange, to me, that is such a great R&B album. It has moments of alternative. It has moments of being really experimental, but he is someone who is going to say, I don't want this to be considered an R&B album. I want this to be considered a pop album. And I think a lot of when you hear artists say that is because they're wanting the framework to be shifted because of what happens when you are quote unquote just traditional R&B. That means Radio is going to only play you on a certain stations. That means Grammy's only going to put you in the categories against the other R&B. They're not going to consider you for pop. So some of it is this segregation that has still continued to happen. And we, you know, so much of what, you know, R&B is rooted in is segregation. You know, this is a genre where it's like, we are not that far removed from when it was just called race music. We are not far removed from when it was just called black music. We are not far removed from this catch-all term of urban that, you know, we've really only kind of gotten away from in the last year and a half, 2 years, if we will be really honest. Mm-hmm. And so when you're thinking about, you know, I'm going to put a label on anybody who has brown skin, and they, whatever music they do, we're going to just classify it as urban. And you think of how problematic that is, because there's so many people who actually, I'm not even doing R&B music. Like, I'm actually doing experimental, I'm doing alternative, or I want to be Tinashe. So why are you calling me an urban artist? And I'm only really performing pop music, and I want to do a song with Britney Spears, and I want to work with Max Martin, and I want to work with, like, you know, really high-end pop producers. So a lot of this gray space becomes our thinking. And it's really attached to us. And that's why you've probably have noticed there's this huge shift with the generation after us that's like, I don't, what you calling it? Cause I don't really actually care. You know, they don't, there's no attachment to a particular definition of any of it.
Well, but I think that's really important, because I think there's probably someone listening like, well, why does it even matter what we call it, right? But like, it does matter what we call it, because it matters about how it charts on the charts. It has to do with how it gets played on the radio, or if it gets played on the radio. It has to do with how these artists get selected to be in different categories for awards and all of those different things. And I know for myself, I remember, I always point back to this, but the first time I ever really got it in practical application was with Normani last year. I was really trying to get Motivation played on our station, on the station that I was on. And like, our program director was like, well, I don't know. And he was like, kind of back and forth. And I was like, if Billie Eilish or Ariana Grande had come out with this song, it would not be a problem to play it on our station. Mm-hmm. But like, because it's a black girl singing Motivation, like, oh, now we're, yeah, I don't know. Well, it's not on this chart and the label's not. And the, but I was like, this is because she's a black woman. Like, you can just say that and not play it. Like,
and so they consider Normani's, they consider that track what?
I don't, well, because we were a dance pop station and it wasn't a dance pop song, and the label wasn't pushing it. And
I was going to dance, yeah, and I popped to it.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It was really, really frustrating to me. And it made me think about the ways that I always hear artists talking about the importance of radio play and what gets played and what doesn't and all of the other. And that was the first time I saw it like up close and like the decision-making process. Travel, we got songs to get through.
Yes, I'm sorry. I took us on a detour. But this brings me to those artists that, you know, I feel like have a black affectation at times that, you know, that are in that gray area. So like for me, this is like a Gwen Stefani, a Nelly Furtado, this is that area. And so the song I'm playing is from Miss Black Eyed Peas herself, Fergie. Oh, okay. I'm just gonna let it drop.
Hit it, Fergie.
All the time I turn around, brothers gather around, always looking at me up and down, looking at me. I just wanna say it now, I ain't trying to round up drama, little mama, I don't wanna take it. Man. And I know I'm coming off just a little bit conceited, and I keep on repeating how the boys wanna.
Fergie.
Now, Travel, at the very onset there, okay, you guys can't see us all getting our lives on Zoom right now, but like, Travel, like in the very beginning, right, she talks about how brothers want to eat it. She's like rapping, like, it's very black adjacent.
It's decidedly black, actually. It's decidedly black. She's giving us this little rapping situation. I mean, and it's very much like Black Eyed Peas, I feel like, style, right, of music. But then, you know, you go to some of her other songs, and it gives you pop. It gives you country pop, right? And But I feel like she's someone who we look at and we say, oh, that's a pop artist, right? Despite the whole Black Eyed Peas of it all and them being hip hop, but also being very alternative and kind of experimental at times. And it's just, it's interesting to me the ways in which, you know, someone like a Fergie is able to move through these spaces in ways that, like, as we've been mentioning, the Black folks aren't.
What's interesting about this is that when we were talking about this yesterday, I hadn't even thought about Fergie and Nelly Furtado. And like, really, Travell brought up Gwen Stefani. And I was like, oh, Gwen Stefani's interesting here, because I never think of Gwen Stefani as doing Black-ish music, but I always associated her with a lot of Black folks, right? Like, the first person I always associate her with is Eve. Not necessarily, No Doubt. But like that Holla Back song, what was it? What was it? Was it called Holla
Back? Bananas. Yeah, Holla Back Girl.
That's not what it was not called. B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Well, Black people, we call it Bananas.
Don't put that on us. That's your shit. That's you. But like Gwen Stefani and then even people like Bruno Mars and Maroon 5. And like Bruno Mars is obviously not white, but like people that like have a thing that like feels Black adjacent. Color. It has a little extra seasoning on it sometimes. Garrick, what are we feeling in that?
You know, it's interesting because I always point back to the conversation of appropriation versus appreciation, because it's something that I think about often, because it's what matters to me the most in terms of how strongly I'm about to go in on somebody if I'm like, oh, I don't really know. And so I think there's this thing that I don't want to say that it doesn't exist anymore, because I was just having this conversation with you know, my partner the other day, where it's like, you know, where do you categorize, you know, someone like Ariana Grande on that spectrum of appreciation versus appropriation versus someone like Christina Aguilera. And you know, I had never thought about it, because to me, I think when we have these conversations, and the things that bring us discomfort is when we see photos, videos, whatever, of these women who we know are not a particular complexion, but then they are. You know, they show up and they're a little bit more brown. We show up and, you know, there's a way that they are speaking. There's a way in which they are doing even little tweaks. I don't even want to embarrass myself, but you all know what I'm talking about with like some of the things that's like on the top of her records, like yeet. And like, you know, those little ticks that she is very much getting from Black shit. Right. So it doesn't offend me, because I enjoy her music, but I also think that it's very different from someone like Christina Aguilera, who was singing in the church, who, you know, had such a deep reverence for this music from the very beginning, who was going to tell you, these are my influences, these are who I love. And my favorite Christina Aguilera album is like, you know, on the cover and all the videos, she's serving us like old school pinup, but like every single record is like, I want, you know, DJ Premier to be giving me like, you know, Ella Fitzgerald. Like, she definitely was merging these worlds that she had appreciated for so long. And I have such a deep respect for that, because I think that it's great. Yeah. I think it's great when you name it and when you pay homage to it. I think that going back to like the past, it's why ain't nobody ever had no questions with JoJo music ever. Like, ain't nobody ever say, oh, well, I think JoJo's Black. You don't do that, because you're looking at someone who talks about her love for, but is also never presenting as anything but who she is. And I do think that gets lost with some people.
I think JoJo is a perfect example, because I remember the first time I ever heard a JoJo song, someone played it for me, and it was one of those, listen to this and tell me what you, right? It was her singing Week, right? She did SWV's Week, and I was like, who is this? And they showed me her picture, and it was,
I know you fucking lying.
You know what I mean? Like, it was surprising to me. I think this next artist, Sam Smith, is like, you know, people love him or hate him or whatever, but like, I feel like Sam Smith always has songs that make me want to feel something, like make me want to cry, make me feel emotional. Like, I've been in a relationship where like Sam Smith was like the song at the beginning and Sam Smith was a song at the end. Like, you know what I mean? And so I want to play one of his more recent songs. It's called How Do You Sleep.
Oh, yeah. I don't want my heart to break.
what I love about this song, like, is there's like a heavy bass in that song. I was on the radio at the time when this song came out, and like we would be blasting it in the speakers, and like then there was like the Calm app had like a sleep version of it where it was really melodic and like, you know, all that. And it was like, and it was like, this is a perfect way to make somebody fall in love with your song, is like they literally go to sleep to it. But like, I just love like the heavy bass, the everything about that song really hits for me, except in the video with the choreography. We're not going to talk about that. But like Sam Smith, I'm just saying, I'm being honest. But Sam Smith is another one of those, like, he has like those runs that we find, those ad libs that we find in a lot of black artists. The style of his music just kind of really evokes something that is very black, that is coming out of a white mouth, if you will. And it's always made me feel a little like I like the songs, but I don't always feel good about liking the songs, if that makes sense.
Why not? Like, because he white?
Because it feels like it. Sometimes it just feels a little stolen. It feels a little like, because Sam Smith isn't someone that I've ever really seen acknowledging where his sound often comes from, right? Like we talked about, and I mean, maybe he has and I haven't seen it, but like,
I have to disagree really hardly on him because he's gone far and beyond out of his way. I think the only place where he got a little bit of trouble is when he had mentioned like something like, I don't really listen to Michael Jackson, which whatever. I mean, in retrospect, like criticizing him over that I thought was kind of absurd, all things considered. But I think that, you know, I think back to like, I mean, Sam Smith was nominated for a BET award. I mean, there's certain things where he's been very clear in terms of his influences, like how much he's loved Whitney, you know, how much he loves Aretha. But the other part of it, which is I'm actually glad that you picked Sam Smith, is because there's this other whole world of this conversation in which the argument doesn't really exist. And that is when we are talking about folks from across the pond. Their relationship with R&B, their relationship with soul music is not as deeply rooted in this ownership conversation that we tend to have. It just isn't, because they haven't been around. They're around lots of people who look lots of different ways that sing it. So there's a whole class of, you know, we have like little jokes because it's a genre that we love. We love Jordan Reiki. We love Sam Smith. You know, there's lots of these guys, definitely from the UK, from Australia, New Zealand, who are doing really, really, really traditional R&B and soul. But it's also, it doesn't feel, and this is why I disagree with the stolen part, because it doesn't feel that way. It feels completely wholly inspired by what they listen to for their entire life. So how else will they sing? What else, what other music are they going to make? But it doesn't have that feeling of like, oh, okay, so like, who produced this record? Can you call them? Can they come do my album? It doesn't have that kind of vibe that we get from a lot of particularly American white artists where it's like, I want to mimic. I want to mimic this thing. And that's why you have so many folks who start to sound like very particular things. I mean, shit, Whitney created a whole genre of this particular type of singing. So there's, to me, there is no difference from, you know, Adele, who very clearly is like, I sing a certain type of way. It doesn't sound black to me. It doesn't sound really like R&B. It definitely sounds more, it's soulful, but it doesn't have this vibe that kind of gives me that weird feeling of when I hear some of the girls and it's like, oh, I can hear you trying to be Brandy on a record. Like I can hear you trying to just do her runs and copy it.
So I'm glad you brought up Adele, because Adele is my third song. But like Adele does have a different thing that she does. But like Adele also, again, we're not going to get into the picture that she posted on Instagram. We're not going to talk about the Bantu knots. We're not going to talk about the Jamaican flag bikini. We're not talking about the weird pants. We're
not talking
about the feathers. Listen, we're not going to get into it because we just don't have the time. Mm-hmm. But Adele, we see you. but my favorite Adele song is called Send My Love to Your New Lover. And like, again, that was a song that like helped me get through something, right? So
you listen to white people when you are going, you being emotional is what I'm hearing. It's a track record with you.
First of all, I'm feeling attacked and I don't feel safe. DJ, drop that beat.
Let go.
So when you talk about Adele, you feel like her, you feel like her vibe is very different. I feel like Adele is interesting to me because I feel like I always see her doing like a lot of black shit. And I don't mean like the black man that she's dating, but like I always think about Adele and like hitting these Nicki Minaj lyrics or like, you know what I mean? Like she's iconic. Like very, yeah, exactly. And like, those are the things that I love about Adele and that make me really enjoy her. And I feel like Adele has definitely been embraced by black folks in a different kind of way than some artists are.
Well, I think it's to what Garrick said, right? About like Adele and Sam Smith, when you listen to their music, I feel like it doesn't feel like they stealing some shit, right?
That's interesting.
It doesn't feel like they are purposefully mining whatever hip hop R&B trend that they just discovered for the sake of a record. It feels differently, and I think that might be the distinction between the two.
I have to sit with that. I get the perspective, and I don't even know if I disagree with it. I just haven't analyzed it in that way, and I'll have to sit with that.
Yeah. Well, Garrick, you have your last track is from an icon. Yes.
And I chose this track and this person for a very particular reason, because it goes again right back to the conversation about you know, appropriation versus appreciation. And I think one of, and I said all this up to say, I love Pink. I've always loved Pink. I am a Pink fan. But I think that it's bizarre that Pink pretends as if this moment in time did not happen, where, you know, you are assigned to the face and you are trying to actually promote racial ambiguity. You wanted us to believe that you were possibly just, you know, a black girl, maybe, with pink hair. You know, I think there was things that were said in interviews where it's like, I don't want to talk about my race. Like she performed this in such a way that now looking back on it is so insanely problematic, but I think it's something that obviously she very much cleaned up. She cleaned up by, you know, doing the whole thing of, I want to break out from, you know, this label guy who he's making me do it. I'm not, no shade to Carrie. This person is making me do all these records or whatever. Sure. But I now want to have this statement. So I'm, you know, going to get Linda Perry to write me these records. And like, and it was great and it was fantastic. And she, you know, every now and then she still kind of gives us a little bit of a bop. But I think when we're talking about this idea of appropriation, I think the idea of allowing people to believe that you were black because of the music that you were making, allowing people to believe these things about you because of, oh, I grew up in a hood or all this other stuff, whatever. That to me is stealing. That to me is problematic because you are pretending. Honey, well, I mean, we're so far away from that.
What y'all can't see is Garrick was like looking back over his shoulder just a little bit. Because I was like, because are you giving us a look back?
Because
at it
it's that this album is such an absolute bop, but it's really rare to have an artist of that caliber do anything where it's like she barely acknowledges it now. She rarely performs these records now. And I think so much of that is her own guilt. It's her own guilt of her participation in that. And yes, like you could have easily like shot down any interviewer and be like, I'm white. You know, she didn't really do it. I mean, yes, eventually she did, but I'm talking about that very beginning. There was a whole talk about gray space. And I remember an album coming out and she's got these fly sunglasses, this pixie cut. Like she really did look like every sister that was like, you know, had a bit of flavor to her. So I was like, I knew this woman. I knew she was not 100% black, right? But until you tell me, I can't just be like, yeah, you're a white girl, you know, because obviously you have a little bit of a color to you, you know, on the cover, but then you're seeing the video and it's like, ah, she's actually much lighter than what is on the album cover and the packaging and some of the photos. So I started to have these questions, you know, when I started to see her more and more at the press run for that first album. But it's something that I think about often because it's like, wow, like not only does she completely abandon it, but she's, you know, she's kind of have done a little bit of a Miley thing where like she's has said some slick shit about, you know, the genres of music, which she most certainly started off with of like, well, it promotes this and it does this and I don't think it's great, you know? So she's definitely has done those things where that goes back to that idea of like, okay, you are taking from me. And when it doesn't serve you anymore, not only are you discarding it, but you also want to discard us. And that is what felt hurtful. And that's what's always felt really, really, really strange. And, it, you know, going back to the thing with, you know, Miley, which none of us really picked, but that was an era where it was like it happened again. We saw this young white girl say, you know, I'm messing around with this black producer. I want to go ahead and make these records. But it wasn't. What she did was so different from like a Christina or a Britney. Like she legitimately took on this whole image and almost in its, and you know, a record that I actually almost picked was, and I thought it was too old, but I almost picked Madonna's first single because people forget Madonna's very first single is essentially a Tina Marie record. It's to the point where she's not even on the cover of the single. You got black people on the cover. You have, you know, you definitely want to give the impression of, you know, this could be somebody black, maybe. And it's R&B light, you know, it's definitely not full on, but there's not much that separates her first single from anything that Tina Marie was doing. And I thought about picking that because that was such a good example of when we talk about wearing us as style too, because it's one thing to sound like the music, is one thing to grow up in the church, and of course that's all you sing is just like that, but there's another thing to make the conscious decision of I want to do this now, and then I don't want to anymore. And these are artists who have done that.
That's so interesting. We were writing down like a list of like the different artists that kind of play on both sides of the fence. I had never really thought about Pink in the way that you were describing, about how she's not really addressed it. She doesn't really perform a lot of those songs. Like one of my favorite Pink moments was her performing at the VMAs. You're just like a pill, right? And she has on this black thing and she's in a hospital and she's walking around the stage. Like it was just a fantastic performance. And like, I still reach back to that performance as one of my, you know, favorite Pink moments, aside from like the Grammy moment and all those. But like, I haven't heard her even talk about that early music in a long time. I would be really fascinated to hear Pink talk about that period now in an interview and talk about what that was and what it is to her now and how it resonates to her. Some of the other artists that we talked about in our production meeting, and then some have been mentioned here, but like our artists like Post Malone and JoJo, Ed Sheeran kind of toes the line a little bit, Joss Stone, Michael McDonald. Maybe there ain't no love.
Okay, Jared.
Like, you know, I mean, just, I, you know, that's like, all, that's the OG Michael McDonald Blue moment. Soul. Eric Clapton, I mean, has a. Listen. Right. I mean, Eric Clapton has some moments. Justin Bieber had, like, that whole album that he did was what. I mean, a lot of stuff that Justin Bieber has done has felt very R&B adjacent. And then Travell said Celine Dion is honorary black, which I will give. Like, I mean, okay. I don't know what that means, but all right.
I was giving a side eye only because the last time I saw Celine Dion perform, she was singing A Change Is Gonna Come. And she didn't have the range for it. Love Celine, though. She didn't have the range for it.
Oh, no. Oh, the disrespect.
Didn't have the range.
Well, the facts are the facts. Well, I have one final.
Speaking of the range, you got one more.
I have one final song that, you know. So I want to start by saying she is apparently of Jamaican, Puerto Rican, Irish, and German ancestry.
You about to give me my home, girl?
Which is something that only came up in the meeting yesterday.
Are you about to give me my home, girl?
I might. And, you know, so I'm giving
absolutely
you Tori Kelly.
A singer, baby. And a vocalist, honey.
Listen, we live down.
We live for Tori Kelly. Yes. I remember I first fell into Tori Kelly back in the day when she was on YouTube. She and some other YouTubers got together in this video and they did this remix of Rude Boy and Oh My God, whoever sings Oh My God. It's real cute anyway. But
you mean Usher?
Is it? Yeah, that song. Yeah, that one. And
the erasure of black people. My God.
Anyway, but I think she is one of those people who, you know, when black, who also, when you hear her sing, you're like, oh, she know Jesus. You'll just be like, oh, she know him, okay? And so the song I'm going to do, because I want to talk about how some of these artists, you know, love pulling out a black choir to give them a little twang. She's not this person, because I love her, but I love this song from her. And so we're going to go with Never Alone featuring Kurt Franklin. Yeah.
You come too far to give up now. If you believe that.
Baby, when I tell you she is singing on this track,
it was so hard to, I'm gonna let you know, it was so hard for me to pull a clip, because I was like, oh, this wench is singing, honey. And she always does. She gives that flat-footed singing that, you know, that your Jennifer Hudson tease, you know, she can run. Oh, her version of Don't You Worry About a Thing from the Sing It. It's the cartoon where she plays a elephant or a hammerhead shark or something.
I love.
Y'all don't know what I'm talking about.
No.
Why y'all are playing me? Oh my god.
I feel like my favorite Tori Kelly moment is her on The View singing the song called Should Have Been Us. Like,
yeah, that's a record. It's a great record.
Like, the radio version of the song is whatever. But like her singing that with her guitar, like, she does some incredible things with her voice, but it's also like, you knew some black folks in your life. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the way she sings is just incredible. Go ahead, Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, Tori Kelly is incredible. That's a great choice, because I think about the conversation that happened, you know, the moment when she came out on the BET Awards that year and sang the roof off the joint, and people are like, I don't understand. And so,
but who, the what?
I know you lying. What's happening? What's really good? But, you know, and it's again, we talk about, you know, someone who sang in the church, like all these things that ticks all the boxes, but also she's a biracial woman. So, because she aesthetically does not look like a traditional, you know, woman of color, there's the question, and then there's the surprise, and there's all the things that we tend to do, and we all do, and that's the whole reason that we're having this conversation, is because of this thing that we do, is we sometimes we're surprised. So I think, you know, when you have someone like that who has to actually then spend so much time talking about her background, because it's, oh, how do you sing that well? I feel bad for you as the artist. I feel bad that that's kind of part of your story now, is sort of having this conversation and having to constantly talk about, you know, the other parts of you, whereas someone like Jhené Aiko, who also, you know, is biracial, or Kalani, who was also biracial, like, we see so much and we're like, okay, black, great, you know, we see enough to like let us believe it, or else, oh, she's from Slauson, so great, but like, we don't think about the other parts of them that are not black. And I think it's fine that exists, but again, those questions don't come up because of the way that they outwardly look.
I think I do that with Snow Allegra, because I want to say she's like Iranian or something like that, but like, she has a very that's a whole other conversation.
Want to say the name of the movie was Sing. It's the
just
movie Sing.
Sing.
It's
that's
just
the,
Sing.
Just Sing.
Just Sing.
Not It.
Yeah.
Or Sing Off. Just Sing.
So
okay.
Glad that you got that piece of information for us, Travelle. We were all like, oh, what is he talking about? We're
Let's
so
get
happy.
Garrick out of here. Okay.
Garrick, go ahead and tell us about the book that you already have out and the one that you have coming.
So I am the author of Parental Discretion is Advised. It is on NWA and the Birth of West Coast Gangster Rap. And I am currently almost finished working on my second book, which is Exhale, and it is an exploration of the life and career of Whitney Houston, and I am so excited to finish it, because so many of the conversations we've been having culturally over the last year, 2 years, are things that I've been thinking about with her for the last, I don't know how many years. So I'm really, really, really excited for that one, and that should be around the 10th anniversary of her passing, so February 22.
Alrighty. Thank you so much, Garrick.
Yes, thank you guys. It's so much fun.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have got our listener feedback and our dishonorable mentions. But before we go, we want to know what you think about this topic. So go to Instagram or Facebook. You can hit us up at Fantai Podcast and either tweet us or DM us, or you all can email us at fantai@maximumfun.org. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, so everyone is thinking about how they're eating, how they're grocery shopping, how they're getting their food, all of these different things, because most of us are locked up at home or trying not to go outside. And if you are looking at what you're eating and considering your diet and wanting to make sure that you get some great food, Sunbasket is a perfect and delicious solution for the times that we're living in. Sunbasket delivers fresh, healthy, delicious recipes for all kinds of dietary preferences, including paleo, gluten-free, Mediterranean, vegetarian, and so many more. And they make it super easy and convenient with everything pre-portioned and ready to prep and cook. You can cook a full dinner of organic, fresh produce and clean ingredients in as little as 15 minutes, no matter how much experience you have in the kitchen.
Yes, we told you a couple weeks ago about the Sunbasket orders that we got in, and I just want to shout out two particular meals that have stuck with me all this time, and that is the crab cakes, okay? Mm. They were, baby, when I tell you fresh, mouth-watering, oh my God. And then the shrimp.
We got free ones, but like, I'm going back and buying some because they're so good.
You just buy the crab cakes by itself.
Exactly, just buying the crab cakes. Like, just gonna be buying them.
And then a shout out to the shrimp paella as well.
That is not a word.
The shrimp paella is so good. But right now, Sunbasket is offering $35 off your order when you go right now to sunbasket.com/Fantai and enter promo code Fantai at checkout. That's sunbasket.com/Fantai and enter promo code Fantai at checkout for $35 off your order. sunbasket.com/Fantai and enter promo code Fantai. Fantai is also brought to you by this app called Dipsy. All right. So now Dipsy, for those of you who don't know, is an audio app that has these short, sexy stories and wellness sessions designed to turn you on and help you get in touch with yourself. Now, I will say we got a little trial run of Dipsy, and I wasn't necessarily interested for the sexy stories, but you know, I'm a storyteller. I'm a writer. So I was interested in how they weaved the stories together for the purposes of giving us a little Zane tease. All right. And what I will tell you is I was pleased.
Oh,
I wasn't pleasured because you gave me a look, but I was pleased.
Hey, listen, get your pleasure, sis. I'm not mad. The stories are relatable and immersive, so you feel like you're right there, and there's something for everyone, whoever and whatever you're into. The wellness sessions can also help you unlock new confidence and heighten the intimacy with your partner. And for listeners of Fantai, Dipsy is offering a 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/Fantai. That's a 30-day free trial if you go to dipseastories.com/Fantai. dipseastories.com/Fantai.
Alrighty, beautiful people. Welcome back to Fantai. We're going to get into our listener feedback. This is our section of the show where we read out some of your comments, emails, and all of that. First up, I feel like this is probably going to be the only listener feedback that we do because we have gone a little long in the show. But this email comes from Megan, or maybe it's Megan, who says...
Why would it be me? Never mind. Or maybe it is.
You maybe don't know, is. Megan. Anyway, can white people use the term Fantai, or do we need our own word for it?
I was confused by this email, Megan. I didn't understand it. I was like, but I guess because of the conversations we have here, I guess, I don't know. Megan, Fantai is a made-up word that we do on this show. So white people are welcome to use it. I mean, plenty of y'all do in our emails. So yeah, Megan, you're more than welcome to Fantai. You should probably also be subscribing at MaximumFun.org and running us some... I'm kidding. Go ahead.
No, well, I don't know why you're kidding, but I will say I appreciate the... intention.
The caution. I think.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The caution behind the question. Because, you know, we have conversations all the time about, like, you know, white people literally, you know, pillaging folks' you know, communities and cultures for their own. So well, I
kind of like what this episode was about.
Very that, right? So I appreciate yes. the caution, but yes, white people, you can use it. But if you might be a little nervous about using it, as Jared said, you can become a member of MaximumFun.org/join, and you can give us a little coins monthly to pay us.
It'll probably make you feel better about about using the word. I'm gonna figure out all the different ways that you can say Magan.
Magan.
I'm pretty sure it's just Megan.
So it's probably thanks, is. Megan. Thank you, Megan. Let's get into our dishonorable mentions, which yes. is our time for the show to highlight some stories, some people that caught our attention this week and deserve a call out, either for their good or their stupid. Jarrett, you go first.
I'm going to go first. I think it's important that we speak the name of Chadwick Boseman. I have to tell you, I was like, really knocked on my ass when that push alert came. I saw a push alert come from the Hollywood Reporter saying, you know, Chadwick Boseman has died. And I immediately got on Twitter like, what? And we could talk about that for probably a whole other hour, but I just want to send out love and, you know, the good juju to him, his family, you know, his loved ones, the people around him and all the people who were close to him. Including, you know, folks that listen to this show that I know that are close to him. So, just sending a bunch of love out to those folks.
Yes. Love to the Black Panther. And for really, you know, redefining, I feel like, a lot of these conversations we have in Hollywood. So shout out, to him. I want to give an honorable mention to this new show on HBO/HBO Max. I don't know which one of them, but it's over there. Called Lovecraft Country by Misha Green and an entire fabulous team starring Journey Smollett Bell, Jonathan Majors.
Who is extraordinary. Listen. Journey Smollett, like, just
legendary.
I've only seen the first episode, but like watching her run, I was like, you gotta run. Like, she's incredible.
The show is so good, and I don't even do horror, sci-fi. I don't do that, but like, it is so good, and it weaves history beautifully into this story. You've got to check it out every week. I think it comes out on Sunday evenings. It's just so amazing. They deserve all of the awards.
Yes. I want to give an honorable mention to newly minted lesbian, Niecy Nash. Niecy Nash, as you probably know by now, posted a photo on Monday morning of her in a wedding dress next to a fine ass woman named yes. Jessica Batts, who could have it. Niecy Nash, I'm not even going to talk about the different thing. Never mind.
Okay.
Congratulations, wow. Niecy Nash.
Wow.
And Jessica. That is a link that will do well on Twitter. Let me tell you.
Listen.
They are a hot, hot couple.
Niecy like, Nash, drop the OnlyFans link.
Okay,
Niecy.
See, I didn't say that, but I was thinking drop it. I stopped myself OnlyFans. From saying. Can you imagine Niecy Nash and Jessica Banks on OnlyFans? Move on.
Anyway.
Please move on.
That just want to give them a shout out. The gay agenda is working.
Baby.
Okay.
I see our producer is like, they are both so fine.
Yes. Okay. So they are. Fine. Okay. Last but not least, for honorable mention this week, I want to give a shout out to one of my besties who's getting married on Sunday, Bianca Alston, and her husband, well, I guess boyfriend, fiance, are getting married this weekend. So mm-hmm. I am braving the Rona, hopping on a plane, and going to New York to be at this ceremony. Okay, so y'all send up a prayer for me,
honey. We'll have Tori Kelly sing you a song.
I'm gonna be wrapped up like Naomi Campbell on this plane, so you ain't gotta worry about nothing. But I just wanted to give her a shout out because she's been a longtime supporter of the show. She is a member of the Fanti fam. Yes. And supports us financially, which you can do as well at MaximumFun.org/joy. I'm done.
Also, just really quickly, want to shout this out. Our producer, Laura, was really excited about the story with Lewis Hamilton, who won the Belgian Grand Prix and closing in on Michael Schumacher's record. Really big deal. And so, like, shout out to Lewis Hamilton, because it's a pretty big deal for him. That is going to do it for us. We really appreciate you listening. Please, if you're listening on iTunes, give us a 5-star review. It means a lot to the show and really helps us out. We have over 1,000 reviews now, which is... I'm surprised, like, that's amazing and really, really appreciative of that. So thank you to everyone who has reviewed and left a comment. If you haven't yet, please go and do that, because we check them out and I appreciate that. If you have a comment, a suggestion, or some kind of feedback about the show, you can tweet us, hit us up on Instagram. Both of those handles are at Fanti Podcast. On both of those, you can let us know what you think about the show.
Yes, and as I mentioned already before, you can always join at MaximumFun.org/join to show us your support, or send us some emails at Fanti@MaximumFun.org. Our music is done by the one and only Corece, that's Core.ece, wherever you get Slayworthy audio, and our graphics are done by the inimitable, I keep messing up that word, but y'all know what it is, Ashley Nguyen, okay?
And we actually have a few things to do here, so pace yourself. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. You just realized what you're going to do. I saw it happen on your face, and now I'm nervous. Our producers this week are Kristen Bennett! What is that? Laura Swisher! And Jordan Cowley! I don't know what's happening, but this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
Travel, you're about to break that chair. I just want to be clear. You're about to break the back.
This little IKEA chair cannot hold me, honey.